Cool. All right, Gwen, you ready?
Oh, I hope so.
All right, Ty, you ready?
Who knows, man?
Timeout. Tyler, who are we taking a timeout with today?
Kevin, good to see you again, brother. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, in the 585, the 479, and the Big D, we have Gwen Van Laken. Gwen, thanks for jumping on the call with us today for our I don't know, 90-second guest of Time Out with Leaders. Gwen Van Laken is the executive director at Leadership Rochester. And Glenn, what was your very first job you've ever had?
Oh, Burger King. I worked at
Okay.
Burger King, everybody. So like make it your way, I think it was back
Your
then.
way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Good skills you learn in those jobs early
Oh
on,
yeah.
folks. Yep.
Hey, I a former bartender, server, I think you do learn that how you act, that emotional intelligence could be directly tied to your income as well and performance. So I don't think it's all bad.
Dude, that's awesome.
The one question I wanted to ask you, Gwen, being a now LR grad of what I've learned, the greatest class, as the saying goes. Yes, Tyler, it's a whole thing. We'll get into it later, I'm sure. But I want to ask you, we're driving by, you have a sign right next to the airport, that beautiful billboard that thousands of people drive home from work and to work every day. And if you just had a quote that that you wanted to put, or a saying or a phrase, what would you put on that billboard to really have an impact on everybody's day?
If not now, when?
Ooh.
Boom! Yeah, the power in now, right?
Yeah, I think sometimes we hang on and think there's time and maybe I will, and sometimes we get that in the car or we get it on the song, and sometimes we need that nudge to leap, right? Whatever our what it is. So if not now, when?
Now, is it Wen or Gwen? Are you saying
Right.
that? Because that, I mean, did I just create the business message for Gwen's future company or what? I mean, if not now,
I
Gwen,
don't lean
yes.
into self-promotion, but that's not a bad idea, right? Like, yeah.
Love it. And Gwen, why do you think, as a human being or human race, it's so hard for us to do this now thing? Why do you think we're like natural born procrastinators or something? Because it feels so good to actually do it, right? And it feels so much better after you do it. But before you do it is the tough part, I find. Do you have any experience on why that is, or any best practices to take that leap?
Yeah, well, I think we're creatures of connection, right? And so in connection, you're part of a web of other people who are affected by your decisions. And sometimes we just kind of need to reach out and activate those connections to say, I'm thinking about doing this. And even in ambiguity, we're not always confident that we can do it, whatever it is. So I think that's what I experience. That's what I've tried to do for others around me, is I've kind of watched them think about doing something. I think we hesitate because we're connected and we feel responsible, and we are responsible for others. And the more that we can support each other in launching into whatever it is we're considering, that's the purpose. That's where we're going, and that's the environment we can create for one another.
Yeah. I was having a conversation the other day with a friend of mine, and I kind of saw, like, conditioning wise, I think, like, a lot of us are servant leaders, but are really always taking into consideration how that other person's feeling, their emotions, and sometimes to self-detriment. Because that's sometimes what I see, is we're all about promoting somebody else, because my generation, we were the trophy generation. So everybody got a trophy. It was, how could you make everybody else better, and not single out yourself? And I think it's that fine line between ego and confidence. What's your definition? You've been around a lot of different leaders. You see the difference between ego and confidence, but it is a very important part to leadership as well. But what have you heard, and what is your difference, and why is confidence important when you are trying to take that next step forward?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, particularly as a woman. I think that confidence among women is sometimes harder, not always, but it's definitely something that's in the ecosystem of my everyday conversations. It's just significant. So I'm not sure how to develop it, how to strengthen it, other than to talk each other up and to build up the confidence. And I think at some point you get to a get to a place in your personal development where you're like, okay, I have a solid sense of my skills and my strengths that I'm going to bring. And hopefully you have a solid sense of what are some areas you need to build out around you, because you might need a little help in those areas, myself included. And once we have a solid sense of that, then we can say, this is who I am and this is where I'm going. This is where I think we should go. And you invite more people into your circle to give you feedback, but you stay the course. You know, you kind of chart your direction and make decisions based on those around you and a lot of voice. And confidence is something it's in different spheres, right? Like you can be confident in one area and not confident in another. It's just like players on the field. I mean, you guys are talking about games, right? Like, so I know I'm really good at this role and I am not good at that role. And I'm confident in this role and I know I need help and I got to go get some assistance in these other positions that I might be asked to play and might not have all the confidence in.
I love that. Cause you mentioned women. So I'm going to go there because I know you're kind of skirting around it, but there is this twofold definition. There's a male definition of confidence and ego. And then the male's definition of what a female's confidence, and it comes across as aggressive or opinionated or direct. I've heard words used, even though the same similar language is used by a male, and even worse in a lot of cases. How do you find that balance? How do you make sure that but it is truly inclusive and equitable in the conversation that you're having? How do you kind of build that presence to let them know that they're one, safe? It sounds like you find comfort in surrounding yourselves with best people, people that are going to support you, tell you what you're doing right, tell you what you're doing wrong. But how do you let other leaders help them self-discover, to your point, what they need to be doing in a tasteful way, taking into consideration some of those lifelong conditioning that we've had over our life? But that male and female relationship is so important, but I feel like it's not talked about enough.
Yeah. So let me just first say, like, I think men have the same struggles with confidence that women do. It's just something that I see more epidemic among women. And that might just be because that I am one, but there's a lot of research around shows, right? Imposter syndrome among women. My first confession is it's not easy and I'm not perfect at it. And there's people around you that can tell you that I'm not perfect at it. So there's that. Ego versus confidence. I think that we share struggles on both sides. Yeah. I have experienced some pretty aggressive behavior towards me when I first came into my role. And I still get rattled by some of what I experienced. And when I get in a closed room with women, sometimes we talk about it. And it's not to say that it's epidemic, but that definitely exists. And I think I go back to just recognizing people's differences. Like, there's nothing wrong with ego and confidence and even aggressiveness in the right situations, but we're all going to bring in different skill sets. My personal gift that I've learned to just appreciate about myself is I'm a huge systems thinker. I'm a really big systems thinker, and I have a 30-year outlook on kind of things that I see. And so that's really great. That's really wonderful. And it gives me a little bit of an ability to talk in front of what I see in the future and what connectivity is, but I don't always bring people along on the interim. And I think that the way and the strengths that we each bring are different, and we assume people know that about us, or we assume that they have the same gifts. And then in those assumptions, we misconstrue. We make assumptions about ego. We make assumptions about why are he or she so confident, or wow, they must really know everything they're talking about, when of course they do, except for when they don't, you know. I think it's just understanding that even leaders, a local congressman said years ago, you know, I kept running for election and getting into these chairs and these positions and getting into the room. And then I'd run for the next position and assign a senior position. And I'd get into the room and I kept waiting for where the smart people are. And I realized, you know, as they got really seasoned and up there, that I am who the smart people are, right? Right. So confidence and ego comes like, you know, just surround yourself, constantly learn. And whether you're male or female, you have a lot of gifts to offer, but there are style differences that can come out across genders. Yeah. Okay. Just gender's kind of fluid and it's just different.
Hey, Gwen. And I was going to ask you, if us three are cruising on our way to BK today to eat some Hershey pies, maybe a Whopper without cheese for some reason. They don't serve Whoppers with cheese, Kevin. It just blows my mind.
Wow.
But that was really going to be my question at first. But if we could tag along three other people, who would it be, Gwen? Anyone you look up to, anyone fun, dead or alive? Who's Gwen bringing to the BK party with me, you, and Kevin?
The BK party. That's an interesting one. We got to have fun in the car. So if they're dead or alive, I'll go with Robin Williams.
Right? Wow.
You gotta have one
that.
Really strong, fun person in the car. Yeah. You definitely want that. I like to read a lot. I like to learn a lot from people. And Wangari Maathai is like one of my history heroes. So she's the first African-American woman to win the Nobel Prize. I love her. I put her in the car.
Okay.
And who else? Maybe. Do they have to have been alive? Because I'm into genealogy and I keep thinking about like what the future looks like. So maybe like a great, great granddaughter or something.
Okay.
I haven't met yet. You know, you gotta speak truth into the future. Like how
you do look 30 years ahead. Your assistant. Right? So, yeah.
Well, if I get a choice, those would be my third. And I could pick an alternate if you want. That's fine. Or we can have a bus. We can just pick a whole.
A BK bus. Yeah, absolutely. And I was gonna ask you, you're a local up there. What's your favorite Finger Lake?
Okay, I'm going to get in trouble because I live really close to Canandaigua Lake, which I love and it's beautiful, but my heart is on Seneca Lake. So
yes, exactly,
yeah.
Right? No-brainer. Why is the other one you said so much more expensive? Or, you know, it's number two to Lake Tahoe. You know, you hear that all the time. But, dude, I'm taking Seneca all day.
All right.
I'll chime in here. Seneca's a little cold for my liking. That was the lake that I always went to when I went up there. It is deeper than all the other lakes.
Beautiful lake country here. We're really like great country up here, right? Yeah. In the Finger Lakes of New York. So if any of your listeners haven't been, it is stunning. Stunning.
Oh, it's amazing. I remember when I was up there like 2 months fresh and I was on Skinny Atlas. And I had no idea how much any of this stuff cost. So I was like, I think I could live here, you know?
Maybe 30 years with her great, 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 great grandchild.
Maybe. Yeah. Let's hope.
Cool.
All right. So my first shameless plug for Leadership Rochester is they have great food for every event. And Gwen is usually the mastermind. She's the foodie that selects a lot of these options. So Tyler, instead of Burger King, I'm going to ask Gwen, what spot in Rochester? Because now I'm dying to know after I've tasted a lot of her other culinary secrets in Rochester, many that I now go into. What is that one spot that you're going to take us and this bus that we're bringing to BK? We're going to make a U-turn and actually head to your favorite spot for your favorite dish.
Yeah. Well, so we, as an organization, we hire local, right? So we pay for all these. Literally, I get to go do recon at restaurants that we might be considering for catering. Like, that's pretty nice. That doesn't mean I'm an expert, but it does mean I enjoy that work.
Tyler's licking his chops for those responsibilities. Yeah. He's like, when do I get those responsibilities?
I hear it all the time. Yeah, I got to do that one day for a living.
Yeah, well, we'll go into that. I'll help you with all the business mindset of how to make that happen. But let's see. So I think the one that seems to be under the radar right now, but wasn't always, and I still go to it for comfort food, but Lebanese-style comfort food or Middle Eastern, is Sinbad's on Park Ave. They're my, instead of a grilled cheese, I go there for, like, a grilled pita. They are the best. So if you like, kind of pitas or falafels or any kind of Mediterranean salads, they're really good. Aladdin's around the corner is good, too. So those are two that are outstanding in terms of just my kind of quiet comfort, meet somebody there.
I love Sinbad's. The shish kebab pita is like to die for with the hot
sauce. So fresh.
Just out of this world. But it kind of brings us up. Food is inspired from all over the world. And Gwen, I know you're from Rochester originally, but you've also taken breaks from Rochester, I guess. to travel abroad, to what was the biggest lesson that you learned in that first opportunity that you had to move away from Rochester and submerge yourself in another culture? What was the biggest lesson that you had?
So I'll just say my husband and I got married and I moved to Connecticut. So we were outside of New York. And then after 9/11, he worked for a Swiss bank and we wanted to kind of change up where we were living. And so we ended up living in Switzerland and our daughter was actually born there. It was a great opportunity. Wow. So the first thing on the learning of what to do was, that sounds interesting. I think let's go for it. You know, so just being willing to lean into the adventure. And when I got to Switzerland, we were kind of settling in and it sounds all glamorous, but I was enormously pregnant. We were like trying to find a house and we didn't have a car. And I was like backpacking to the grocery store. I mean, this was like, it was lovely. And we already, we had our your oldest son was like, it was just a lot. So anyway, but I went to this picnic. It was like their Independence Day, I think is August 1st, might have been July 1st. It was a community picnic. And I'm sitting down with this really older gentleman who was Swiss. And he only spoke Swiss German or High German, which is proper German. And I spoke like very little. Anyway, he's like, where are you from? And I'm like, the US. And he goes, we got talking about Bush was in office. And it was kind of a tough time to be, that was my first experience realizing it's tough to be an American expat and to have children in school when you're an American expat, because not everybody's agreeing. So it's a little complicated, right? Other people have a much deeper sense of what the US is up to. Anyway, I sat across from this elder gentleman. We got in a conversation that was a little transactional, but we were getting it. And we got talking about like settling in and like, how are you doing as an American? And how are you as a Swiss, you know, gentleman of in our town? And he writes down on a piece of paper, sliding it over to me, he writes down 1292. And he shows it to me. I'm like, okay, I have no idea. And then he writes down underneath it 1776. And I'm like, okay. So I'm looking and I'm like, oh, 1292 is when the Confederatio Helvetica, which is Switzerland, was created. And he goes, you're just young. Your country's wow. simply young. And I just thought, wow, that is such an interesting way to describe some of our upheaval or our challenges or where we are. And it just always stuck with me, you know, like that mindset of we're all learning, you know, whether we're 5 years, 100 years behind or 500 years ahead, we're all on this journey to learn and improve and do better. And so that and lots of other things I learned cross-country, but that really stuck with me.
So you're saying the sentiment that America is always the best is only if we always fail to get that other perspective, right? To really truly understand what is whose definition and what's the definition of best. And I see that. And it's a kind of a reflection that I've shared before on the show when I talk to couples from other countries. Is I'm just fascinated that only, I think, like 25 or 27 million people in the United States even have passports of the 327 million. So that perception can only be grown when you start to get out of this area and start to see what other things are happening. So any other things that you were just saying, this is so culturally different. Any notices that your kids had maybe in school or just their approach to children? I've also heard that from a lot of mothers when you go overseas, that children are less of a burden because it's socially accepted to have a child crying in public comparatively to here. So any other like personal or professional things that you noticed that were nuances that we could take back and really learn from here?
Yeah, I think two things, which is kind of dichotomy. One is, you know, in Europe and in Canada, even, it is really common to have not just full-time, part-time to accommodate for like family life, but to actually talk about your jobs in a percentage basis. So you'll say, I work 100%, I work 75%, I'm at 30% right now. And it's very often just an offset of the other percentage of our life that is spent supporting our families. And it is just not always the case, but very often the case among women to talk about kind of that, oh, what are you working right now? Or, you know, are you going back into work? And at what percentage are you going? So there's that built in. Yeah, it's just a mindset, right? We're sort of on and off. And the other thing is we've also, through my husband's work, we've also had the opportunity to take our kids to different places. We've taken them to Dubai. We've taken them to China. We usually offset the extra money that he makes and we take them on a trip. So we're making, it's a revenue neutral, but we believe so much in our kids being able to experience the world because it shapes, you know, everything you bring to everybody else in your life. And that's just to say, when we were in Beijing in 2016, we happened to be in an apartment and we were overlooking a Chinese elementary school, which turned out to be one of the most favorite and memorable parts of my school because you got to watch them interact with these kids and all the different activities they were doing with these children and just watching the investment in them and all the types of extracurriculars they were doing. Because we literally, it was like an open school where there was, I don't know, remember 90210? I don't know if you remember. Okay, I'm dating myself. 90210.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So it wasn't like hallways. It was like a big open green and overseeing and just watching that investment in youth all the way through in different ways, from decompression time to physical time to doing science outside in these really interesting ways. It was just cool. And it just happened to be because we were next door and I was I'm always learning. I'm always kind of curious.
I love how you put that investment in our youth to hopefully be contributing members of society in their own way and what they want to do and paint their Picasso, if you will.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, Gwen, I feel like you're a lady of action. You know, like you're not. And then Robin Williams brought it up in Good Will Hunting when he's talking to Will on the bench when Will's talking about all the Sistine Chapel and all this stuff he's read about. And Robin Williams looks him in the eyes like, but have you ever smelt the paint in the Sistine Chapel? You know, have you ever, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of gives me chills to this day. And even, I don't even think we have to go outside the country sometimes if we have an open mind. Like even me, I remember like a little food truck I opened up there. I'll never forget my first time at the food truck rodeo. One of my Italian friends from the West Side was like, what kind of bread are you going to use? And I was like, oh, white bread, man. And he was like, bro, you're white bread, man. And I was like, yeah, dude, like, you know, that's what we do in like Kansas City and, you know, Texas, Arkansas, whatever. He's like, will you just try one of our bakeries, man? You're about to start. And dude, till this day, I'm not a white bread man. and it blows people's minds, you know. And you know, you call it hard rolls, and I was like, "What the heck's a hard roll? You know, is it like something stale? No, it soaks up the sauce and the cheese and everything else." But anyways, real, I want to switch up to your where you went to college. All right, St. John, big prominent college up there. I always ask this question: what did you learn most while you were attending St. John Fisher College, Gwen?
Yeah.
What is it? I'm always curious.
Yeah, well, you pulled up my LinkedIn profile. So let me first clarify, and then I'll maybe just tell you what I learned from my journey of college. I'll tell you this. So
I
did a certificate program for nonprofit leadership at St. John Fisher, but I'm actually a full alum of MCC, a local community college, of SUNY Brockport, their business school, and then RIT. And so, and then after all of that, I came to work in the organization I'm in, and I said, I need to chop this off with a little bit of intentional nonprofit education, even though I felt pretty good. So I'm a connoisseur of local colleges, if you will.
Yeah.
And what might be helpful to know about my story is I became a teenage mom at the age of 19 as a freshman in college in my freshman year. So what I learned was how to buckle down and have hard work, how to take responsibility for other people from a very young age with a lot of family support. And I learned about the importance of connected support to get through those things. And I also learned about the power of career-driven individuals who teach in our community colleges and our SUNY schools and our universities. But I'm really interested in people who go out and have a really great career, and then they say, I want to teach somebody about what I learned. I had the best professors who are vice presidents at Xerox and Chase and small business owners and CPAs. And man, I would, what a legacy. I think those lessons, and to know that all these years later, I remember those folks who shaped that education, even for me. And I turned out all right, I think.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. Yeah. I want to kind of go back to, we don't have to get out of the country to gain perspective. And I think what Tyler said really defined Leadership Rochester in a much better way than I could ever. Because that to me is what Leadership Rochester is all about. It's breaking our routine. It's breaking our traditions, almost our comfort zone, and forcing us to gain a perspective, because you interview us and we have to be willing to gain a new perspective, but you do it in such a way that it's non-confrontational. And it has to be something that you've learned through your relationships and your peers. How do we take what we learned in Leadership Rochester and apply that to businesses? How do we get businesses' commitment? Because I love what you're saying about the academia side. I think when business individuals go back into academia, it actually makes what you read in a book real. Because some on the academia side don't really understand organizations and understand business and how it factors in. And that to me was really the problem or the disease itself. How can we get businesses to really start to open their eyes and ears to the community challenges, which in turn over the long term become business challenges and problems? How have we tastefully do that? Because you did it so elegantly within the program. It's a long program, but how can we start to get them doing it?
Yeah, the first, I think, is spending time together. So Leadership Roster was founded 32 years ago by a really diverse group of leaders across the community. We had, you know, Sandy Parker, she was head of the Chamber of Commerce. She was co-founder of Unshackle Upstate. Wade Norwood was on city council. We had the Urban League, the Junior League, United Way. We had all these different, there was more, but they were different stakeholder groups is what I'm saying. And so you kind of had this folks who had different interests trying to spend time together. And so Leadership Rochester's program is really about bringing people together. We bring people together from the public sector, the private sector, the nonprofit sector, and they spend a year together. We get together one Friday, full Friday a month. And we, everything we do is in the community. So when you're talking, Tyler, about being out in and experiencing, smelling the Sistine Chapel or whatever, we're essentially doing that in Rochester. I have an office, but we don't do any programming out of here. So the first thing is to get out of your comfort zone. I went through the program, so I get that how the impact that can make, where you go from kind of familiar with certain areas. We have people who are lifelong Rochesterians who go through the program and they're like, I thought I knew everything and now I really don't.
I knew nothing. I learned that real quick. I was like, I've been here 10 years. I don't know anything.
Yeah, because there's always more we can learn from one another. In terms of the business side, I think it's an interesting question. I think as a community in Rochester, kind of moving away and coming back, particularly in our town and maybe in others, but I've noticed it more here, is we sometimes have a more of a deficit view of things. So we talk about issues and problems and things we need to work on. And those are all really relevant and incredibly important. And the bulk of our organizational time has been really trying to tackle those issues. But at the same time, I've brought in this kind of lens that if you're only ever talking about negative deficit issues, it's hard to get other people in the boat with you to see why they would even want to bother strengthening the community. And with businesses in particular, I think that first, businesses more and more have a social construct. They have some social impact that they're trying to make. Not all, but many. It comes up in some conversation, whether it's an individual trying to, a leader who's passionate about a project and they give at that level, or whether they have a more cohesive giving plan aligned with their organization. But the other side is, you know, we talk about all these issues. The reality is, if your community is stronger, then your business is made stronger. Your employment force is stronger. Their family unit is stronger. Often your economics that you're able to then draw from and invest in your community is stronger. So I'm trying to, like, hopefully get people to start flipping. So if that's an issue, if that was strengthened and resolved and your community was much stronger as a result of it, what would look different for you? What would look different for the employees in your organizations, for the leaders who are running the organization, for the organization itself? And Kevin, I think I shared with you, like, I do interview all the candidates for Leadership Rochester. I've done that since 2019, the 2019 class when I came in. And I always ask, like, what's one thing that if we worked on it in Greater Rochester, you think could make a significant difference, you know? And for years, that answer has been education. And that's an absolutely valid response. But this year was the first year the answer changed to workforce, which makes sense because it's downstream, right? But that answer was coming from business leaders who all of a sudden were like, I want to strengthen the community because I'm seeing how this impacts me. And so it just kind of goes to that cycle. If one is stronger, we're all stronger. And I think businesses want to do that. They just don't always know how, or they can't come up for air. A lot of, you know, most of the country's small businesses, it's hard to come up for air that long. And I can attest to that. We're actually a small organization.
Yeah. Especially when you're just surrounded by distractions and just trying to get through your day, I think is half the battle. But I would tell you, I said the same thing even before I came into Leadership Rochester to a lot of the CEOs and businesses, is that you didn't care about those graduation rates for 30 years. And now you're just paying the price, because it's I think that output focus without really truly understanding the inputs. And that's the same that I see from the workforce planning and development standpoint. It's what skills are actually required. Do we still need degrees for these positions that we always ask for degrees for? But I think you just did it in such a tasteful way, because you're talking about a very emotional thing, right? And I believe Leadership Rochester, and in through the conversations that happened within and now externally, is you had a tasteful way of connecting to emotions. You didn't force people to have an emotional response. You just presented the opportunity and the environment and the trusting environment and being vulnerable to allow us to have an emotional response, which elicited passion and purpose And allowed us to align our strengths to that same passion and purpose once we were emotionally persuaded. So I think emotions is something we push so far away from in the business community, but the way that you structured it is a great way for a lot of businesses to learn from, is that create this safe space, create the environment, and you will see how people will fall into alignment. And when you're not telling them, you're simply showing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk about a lot of what, so I didn't like, right, like the organization's been around for a long time, and I've certainly put my tailored lens on it. But a big part of the leadership roster experience over all the years has been kind of taking off your everyday set of glasses and taking a minute to put on somebody else's glasses and setting those down and then hearing from somebody else. Equity of voice is so important to what we do, meaning we're not bringing in the same leaders all the time. We are really working hard to make sure that we have representation of voice, the really important leaders who are out there, some of whom who have not had the spotlight on them, even though they are like amazing, amazing leaders. And so I think, you know, just actually being charged as a leader to be in this program with other people who may or may not agree with the way that you think, and spending a year together, hearing from other leaders respectfully, but just to experience that is different for every single person who goes through the program, but it draws a thread, because the common thing, the one common thing that people have when they start in the program with us is that they have a vested and desired interest to strengthen the community, either through their personal work and their activism, or their private work through business, whether it's through their job specifically, because that, you know, they look outward facing in the community, or they may be a seasoned executive who finally just has time to look up and is like, okay, the systems are at play around me, and I want to make sure I'm doing the best that I can with my organization. But having that common thread of people who want to strengthen Greater Rochester and want to just figure out how to do it better, that's a pretty awesome group to spend a year with. That's an awesome part of my job every year. And I think, Kevin, your experience speaks to that. And I'm an alum of the program. I never thought I'd work here, but it was such a powerful experience that I had that if not now, when moment.
I think that speaks directly to what, when we say intention drives attention. If you come in with the right intention, you're listening, you're asking different questions, you're genuinely curious. I love how you said equity of voice. You're valuing everybody's voice the same. But I think we talked about it earlier. Assumptions are dangerous, and perception is dangerous until we're willing to change our perspective. And I think you changed a lot of people's perspective, because there's a lot of things that we believe to know, and very quickly learn that you don't know. And you need to continue to on that mission to fact find and gather insights and work together, because not one singular person can solve all the problems.
And I'd love a shot of Wade Norwood right now, right?
Like, I know, dude. Wade, I know. Like, I know. He was Wade? On the show too, Gwen, when you said that.
Oh, I love Wade Norwood.
Wade was good.
Good grief. That guy had it going on, man. I think it's like he had to take the interview from his phone, and it was just still amazing. You know, he was just like, why do you think, Gwen, that it's so, what's the word? Fascinating, maybe? Intriguing and just awesome learning from people different than us. Like, when someone doesn't look like you or whatnot, like, why is it so awesome to learn from them on their experiences rather than someone that kind of looks like me, yourself? Are you following me?
Sure. I mean, if you go with the looks like, well, I think that offering people a voice who've always had important and powerful things to say and maybe not being given the mic before allows you to just simply educate yourself further about what the whole community is experiencing or that individual within that sector is experiencing. Simply by handing somebody the mic, and they have likely been there for generations, like doing amazing work, allows us to go, we all have our aha moments. Oh my gosh, how did I not know that? You know, I think I was 37 years old when, or maybe 34. I don't know. It was so long ago, I don't remember. But I read the letter, like, certain things. Like, I finally sat down and read the letter from the Birmingham jail as an adult, like, read the preceding letter and read the letter. And I was like, man, I should have cracked this open a while ago. This would have broken through a lot of stuff for me. Cause there's, you know, like, and it was there, but it wasn't really taught. And so when we spend time, people are like, did you ever really read that? And you're like, okay. Anyway, so there's that view. On the business side, let's just get serious about the business side. If you're not aware of what different communities and community leaders and community members and constituents are thinking, seeing, experiencing, if you're not actively making yourself aware to ask questions, you might get answers chucked at you that you didn't even know you were misstepping. Like, we see that time and time again. And it doesn't have to be that way. We just want to, you know, see if we're intentional in trying to ask questions. I do a lot. We have committees that help put our program together. I do a lot of post-committee meeting one-on-one calls to tease out kind of what, like, here's what we all talked about, but I'm wondering about the unsaid. And I just kind of wonder if you might share that with me. That takes energy and work, and but the learning is so powerful that our program would not be the same without that intentionality of reaching out. And I think the same is true for business strategy and business growth and HR and all sorts of things like that. You really have to get intentional about asking people their opinion and then acting on it, right? Like making decisions based on the feedback that you get.
I love it. I love, because what we're talking about is time, and you kind of brought it up from that European perspective. Is they viewed that almost as percentages, and I think we kind of saw that evolution here in the United States a little bit during the pandemic. Is that it forced us off that hamster wheel to start to really question what were we spending our time on, and what at what toll or at what cost on us individually, in exchange for what. And it seems like that's kind of, that's always, we live to work, as it says, as many say about the United States, in our area, and maybe it's the young country or, just our philosophy as it comes to the economy. But instead of working to live like the Europeans do, and you kind of brought up when you were 19, having a child, time management probably became the epitome of your day because you had to plan it down to the minute. And we hear a lot of excuses. We hear a lot of leaders. We hear a lot of managers. Oh, I don't have time, or I can't possibly do that. And I go back to what you said on your billboard, if not now, when? And I feel like, Gwen, a lot of people are making more excuses and failing to spend their time on the things that they know that they should be. And I don't really fully understand why. But when you talk about time and asking more questions, that was kind of one of the reflections I had from Leadership Rochester too. It seems like a lot of decisions are made without a lot of perspective gained. And one decision made that they believe it's the best way to do it is only because they've surrounded themselves with other people that share that same sentiment or are not going to disagree. And I don't think that's any different than what we see in businesses. How have you found it? How have you been able to bring people together to create that safe space to allow people to share those perspectives, those insights, so that everybody's voice can be viewed equitably and factored into the decision making? What have you learned from the community? What have you learned as you left the United States? What have you learned about truly solving the problems that either the community faces or the business faces?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll just touch on is Europe doesn't have it much more figured out than we do. So there's things we can learn, right? And same with Asia. Like, there are things that you can learn from one another. So yes. I'll just say there's great things I took away, and I'll leave it at that. And there's other things we can learn from each other. But I'm going to take your question from actually the point of, because I'm an executive director of a small nonprofit, and among small nonprofits, this role is really complicated and it's heavy. It means we have to know how to do basically everything, or how to figure out how to find somebody to help us do something. And we rely often on volunteers and boards and connectedness to help us get our work done. And so at Leadership Rochester, our board is a big piece of, or an example of, how other things operate in what we do. So if you're involved with a nonprofit or an organization, just a pro tip, like if you're not sure about them or where they are on their journey, Google their board. It's just a good bellwether about like, who's on your board? Like, what does that look like? What does your top feedback and decision-making group look like? And at Leadership Rochester, when I came on, we had a great board, and then it evolved even more so after I've come on. And what I mean by that is, there was areas that as a leader, I knew I wanted to have critical leaders with critical expertise who would give it to me straight if I asked them for it, really guided leaders. And you can do this in different ways, right? You can create people around you who will give you feedback, whether you're in a nonprofit with a board to report to, or you're setting up committees like I do for volunteers, or you're a manager in an organization. But what was important is that I got really intentional about with the board, with my board chair, which you must do in my structure, with a nonprofit. But we got really intentional about me saying, look, this is where the future DEI was in particular. We, Leadership Posture, had been in the DEI space, diversity, equity, inclusion space for 20 plus years.
Wow.
But I knew that there was significant evolution in the DEI space, and that the education sector around diversity, equity, and inclusion had caught up to a lot of the community activism that had happened, meaning higher education now had chief diversity officers, and there was evolving best practices around how to teach these things and how to manage emotion in the room when you're dealing with these things. And I had some sense of that, but my most sense was I need somebody else to tell me. I need at least somebody to bounce ideas off of. And so we began with that question and other questions to begin to kind of build the board with people that I heavily trust, like, you know, that, and please give it to me straight, you know? So
yeah.
I'm asking.
How did you get yourself comfortable with that? Cause that's where I think right. Why do we promote who we promote? And I can only speak to the organization. Those yes people are typically who are getting promoted because human nature, I want to be comfortable. So homeostasis, I'm going to surround myself with people that are always going to agree with me. How do you fight that natural human instinct to be comfortable with no's or disagreements or challenging opinions? Because you yourself, Gwen, have to be comfortable with that to build a board. How did you get yourself comfortable for that honest feedback?
Well, I think first you go through the first, you know, five rounds of like optimism, like this is all going to work out. This will be fine. You know, like all the community needs is this, you know, and you're like, okay, first you go through that. Everybody goes through that. They have their utopia. You know, if you're a seasoned leader and you take multiple positions and you use that time, your first 18 months of happiness and sunshine, to make strategic change. And we did. But so you have that. I think that one, I really learn. I'm a constant learner. I'm sure many of our listeners are, is I learn a lot from the people around me, and the best bosses I ever had surround themselves with people who are smarter with them, and not just surround themselves with them, but let them go, like encourage them to go and grow. And the accountability piece as managers kind of around the ethics and the standards and the, what strategic direction are we going there? Are you still within that strategic direction? But being willing, I think the best thing I can see from a leader, a really clear indicator, is if you have a leader and one or two or three of their prior direct reports have gone on to ascend into roles that are at the peer leader, that peer role, that tells me that that's a really strong leader, that they have not just developed themselves and their organization, but they are developing people and helping them fly to lead other organizations successfully. So that's how I
love
that.
That's a great one, because it shows that they're selfless and then their selfish biases aren't at play, because I think a lot of people should be up for promotions or should have certain leadership roles. However, that boss would always is trying to cut them down or keep them down without truly understanding or realizing their actual value within the business. So I see that. That's a great indication. I think it's a great way to really truly see who's a leader and who's a title, I guess.
Yeah. I think some of our 360s or even the metrics that organizations, like, people leave because of managers, right? That's what they say. And it's totally true. That's absolutely true. But the way that we measure doesn't always measure the positive leaves. Like, correct. We measure every absence and departure as the negative, which is interesting in this age of everyone leaves every 3 years. Yeah. You know, I've gotten some interesting resumes across my desk in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a different dynamic and a different way we can measure ourselves. And besides, what's the fun of being in a room with you're talking to yourself? Like, and all you have to hear is I guess it makes it easy, but that's not the future of business. That is not the future of community building. You really need different voices in the room, if not to understand your community and what you're doing personally, but to understand your markets.
Yeah.
I think you touched on it
with the fixed versus growth mindset. And I think traditionally we have a very fixed mindset that and we're unwilling to adapt and change until we're convinced that we should or need to. So very, very interesting. Ty, I think we got time for, we're at time. So maybe one or two more quick questions. Do you have to go anywhere, Gwen?
Yeah, I got to jump right now. But perfect. Gwen, it was great meeting you. Hope to meet you in person when we come up to visit, you know, sooner than later. And my last question before signing off is, I was always curious of why there's like a prison on Seneca Lake. Have y'all seen that?
It's a Navy depot, I think.
Oh, that's a Navy depot. Well, I'll sign off right there then.
The only reason I know that is my great-grandfather used to cut hair down there. So that's the only reason I knew that. Yeah. It's because that lake is, they don't even know how deep it is. I've heard a rumor. They're not even really sure how deep that lake truly goes.
The Navy Depot. Unbelievable. I just thought that was a white collar prison. All right.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them, but yeah, sure.
There's other stuff down there, but you know,
we'll Bitcoins and stuff. All right, guys. That's
too funny. All right, yeah. I got one more for Gwen as we're finishing up. We're talking about Leadership Rochester. I keep sending you people, and I'll continue to send you people and continue to talk about you favorably. But this is your opportunity to really, I guess, say what's coming in 2024. What are we getting excited about? Are there still positions available? Is what I'm now getting asked. So I'll leave it up to you, the executive director, Gwen. 2024, sure to be the best class ever. I'm positive of it.
Gotcha.
What are we looking forward to?
Yeah, I think we're looking forward to a great year of talking about critical areas we can strengthen Rochester. We talk about it in economics and education and healthcare. We talk about all aspects of the community. We're putting together a great class for the upcoming year. We are, I'm actually conducting, I said I interview everybody. I'm doing those today and tomorrow, doing all sorts of those. There is still time to apply. We have some spaces left for next year, particularly those from the private sector. So looking for a few more folks from that sector, men, great to have. We do have a great class coming and looking forward to it. We kick off in September and everything we do is experiential. It is, I think, an experience, the professional and personal development that is unlike anything anyone will have done in their professional career. It is just simply about getting out and getting embedded in community and finding out what leaders are facing and community members are facing in their daily work. So it's always changing. And I
get out of those leadership books and those textbooks and actually learn leadership and real hands-on experience is what I tell everybody about Leadership
Absolutely.
Rochester. It's
Absolutely.
Taking what you think you know and actually seeing how it actually applies when you're trying to organize people towards a common goal. So if you can, reach out. Leadership Rochester has got an incredible website. And even if you took something away from Gwen and you want to donate to the organization, they rely heavily on donations as well. To keep this mission going and to help emerging young people like myself that sometimes don't even see yourselves as a leader, you need to find your tribe. And my tribe convinced me that I needed to do this, and I'm so happy that they did. So, Gwen, I am tickled that you said yes to be on Time Out with Leaders with us. And I know I took me to the end of the class to ask you, but I really wanted to get to know you and not want to be interviewing the technical leader of the whole thing during the class. But I'm so excited for the continued success and seeing you as the executive director. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for agreeing to be on this fun and wild show.
Thank you. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Tyler, for the work that you're doing. Can't wait to see what spins next for both of you going forward.